back to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer, Jay's Analysis. And I wanted to talk about what's happening in the UK, because a lot of people's government incompetence and the failure of the leaders of Britain to adequately represent and safeguard the interests of their native population. And that's certainly a factor. But what most people are missing, which is something I covered pretty much all week on Twitter, I had a post that went viral covering a book that I've mentioned many, many times. That's the Johann Ratio book, The Milner-Fabian Conspiracy, because it's such a crucial text to know and understand what's happening in the UK, because the model of what's happening in the UK is the same model for what they want to do elsewhere, particularly in the West, in the United States. And so I want to talk about Islam today, its role in this whole system of what the global elite are rolling out, the plans that they have for Islam, what they want to see it do. And even though Islam itself is a chess piece on the chessboard by the global elite, by Brzezinski, he wrote the book, right, Grand Chessboard. If we think back to the time of the late 70s, when there was the Soviet-Afghanistan conflict, Brzezinski had the idea to, following the pattern of British intelligence decades before him, utilize radical Islam or extreme Islam to fight against the Soviets. And the idea was to go into Afghanistan. There's a famous clip of him saying to the local Afghani population, that land is yours. God gave you that land. And he says that will impel them in the clip. That will impel you to take it back. And of course, what's obvious in this clip is that for Brzezinski, God is a tool. God is a manipulation tactic to use with these rather simple-minded backwoods Afghanistan villagers to get them to fight against the Soviets in that conflict. And that ended up working, because Brzezinski's plan was to wear down the Soviets through this conflict and to get them exhausted, to get them distracted. And that participated in the later decline of the Soviet Union in the 1980s and its eventual collapse. So it played a key role in furthering the collapse. That's one example of the Western elite utilizing Islam as part of their strategy. Now, that doesn't mean that they believe in Islam. So understand that from their vantage point, a lot of these worldviews are tools for conflict, tools for dialectics, tools for geopolitical strategy. In fact, one of the most famous neocons many years ago, who studied under the arch neocon Bernard Lewis out of the UK, was a guy named Samuel P. Huntington, and he wrote the book Clash of Civilizations and the Remaking of World Order. Huntington said that the future conflict would be between Islam and the West, because the worldviews are incompatible. In other words, they knew a long time ago, it's kind of obvious, that Western Enlightenment liberalism is not compatible with Islam. Islam has a perspective that sees all of life as underneath a kind of theocratic rulership of Allah. And so there's no areas of life that are, quote, secular. The inheritance of American philosophy, you could say, out of the Enlightenment, the American experiment, adopted the Enlightenment idea that there would be a kind of recognition of some god, a generic deity. Many of the founding fathers were Christian, but many of them were also deists. Many of them were Freemasons. And so the idea was that we're not going to attach any specificity to this god. It's one nation under a generic god. And so this idea then allowed for the pluralism within the American experiment. And it becomes kind of fundamental to America and Americanism. That obviously doesn't fit with the totalizing aspect of the way Islam understands God. So necessarily these two positions must come into conflict. And that's kind of what's going on in that book. But it's also engineered and manipulated at a higher level. And when we come back, we're going to look at many of the examples of strategists, of the elite, the technocrats, who have talked about how they could utilize Islam to completely rewrite the West and its operating system. This is the Alex Jones Show. Don't go anywhere. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis.
The InfoWars system is very simple. We tell you the truth about what's going on in the world, and we ask that you support us in exchange. If we don't tell you the truth, you probably won't support us. That's our only incentive. All we have is you, the InfoWars audience. And just like our information has to be good, or else we can't expect your support, well, our products have to be good, or we can't expect you to be returning customers. And everybody knows some of the bombshell, incredible, iconic supplements at InfoWarsStore.com. But what some InfoWars audience members don't know about is the InfoWars MD line of supplements. This is our premium line of supplements, and there's something for everybody here. This is the newest line of supplements from InfoWars, designed to boost vitality and enhance overall well-being, available exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. Whether you're looking to support immune health, improve cognitive function, or increase energy levels, our meticulously crafted formulations cater to your diverse needs. Only at InfoWarsStore.com.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We're talking about the history of Western relationship with Islam and the usage of various Islamic groups and sects for various purposes. In fact, Islam as a whole, you could argue, is being used. I want to talk about that here in a second. And there's many books that I've read on this topic, which help, I think, to elucidate the geopolitical role that Islam plays in the mind of the technocrats. And I think the first place to really understand that is to go back to the history of the British Empire. The British Empire thought, for example, that if they could control Mecca and have that as part of their, something under their dominion, then they would have a huge amount of influence in the world of Islam. And to a degree, that makes sense. And that explains a lot of the policies of the British Empire and a lot of the operations that they engaged in. If you know about Lawrence of Arabia, T.E. Lawrence, if you know about Kim Philby's dad, St. John Philby. I always get him mixed up with St. John Hunt, but Kim Philby's father, who was the famous Arabist and intelligence operative for the British, who went and became essentially a Muslim, and that he did that, well, you could debate whether he really believed Islam or not, but he was doing it more so as an intelligence operative to help to carve up and establish the Middle East as we know it today out of the British Empire. So the British Empire is really the background to how we have nations like Iraq or even nations like Israel in terms of the Balfour Declaration. So the British Empire has to be understood to understand today's the way the world is carved up today. And even though back at that time they understood the possibility of using various Islamic groups, what emerged was the idea to actually kind of coax and utilize more and more radical strains of Islam. And that an example that would be the Muslim Brotherhood, which has a long history of being aligned with and funded by British intelligence. British intelligence has for many years, many decades, worked with various sectors of the Muslim Brotherhood as a close ally to do all kinds of operations in other countries and to blame it or pin it on some other group. So it functions as a kind of a proxy, you could say. That doesn't mean that there aren't serious Muslims amongst those groups, but that is part of the history of the Muslim Brotherhood. And many books have been written on that. There's a great book that covers it called Secret Affairs by Mark Curtis. He's a Royal Society researcher, and so we know that being a member of the Royal Society, he's obviously got some clout and some pull in terms of academia. So I think those are reliable sources. And other books that have covered this, there's a book by Robert Dreyfuss called Devil's Game. This book talks about the history of Britain and their intelligence services and their, quote, deep state utilizing Islam. And this one more so focuses on the U.S. Utilizing various Islamic groups for their ends. But both of them kind of have the same principles, the same patterns, same conclusions. And the sort of complex, wide, wild world of Islam, I think, is really crucial to understand. So hopefully we can maybe demystify some of that today. So those are a few examples of how imperial geopolitics has seen Islam as something that might be utilized in various ways. But as we get into the turn of the last century, the early 1900s. We've talked about the Fabian Society. This is the socialist elites of the UK who came out of the Cecil Rhodes, Rothschild, Milner circles, who originally wanted a revamped, re-energized British Empire for the world. That was Cecil Rhodes's plan. But that didn't really work, because after World War I and World War II, Britain started going bankrupt, and we had the rise of the United States as the dominant world power. So they realized in the 1920s, 30s, 40s that they weren't going to have a new British Empire. But the best way to go about this new empire that they wanted to control, this new technocratic superstate, would be to bring the United States back under its fold and utilize it as the engine of the global order. This happened when the elites of the Royal Society, the British superstructure, et cetera, and the people that controlled them, this would be the Rothschilds, Cecil Rhodes, Milner types of circles, the Astors, the Cliveden set. They decided that the United States should have a secret inner group that ran it, kind of like the way that the UK was run. In the UK, they had set up what's called the roundtable groups. This is the Royal Institute for International Affairs, and its idea of these Arthurian roundtable groups. It doesn't literally go back to King Arthur. It's just an image. It's just an idea of how to model governance by wise men, governance by steering groups and committees. And so they set up Chatham House in the UK for these roundtable groups originally. And then in New York, the Rockefellers helped set up Pratt House, which would be the mirror to that roundtable group in the UK. In the United States, this becomes the Council on Foreign Relations, and eventually the Trilateral Commission is kind of above that. And so you have this structure of a breakaway security state, which runs things. And this was the plan that essentially these British intelligence operatives gave to FDR and Bill Donovan when they came and set up this super state, you could say, the secret core breakaway intelligence operation that really runs things in 1942 with the National Security Act, and then it becomes the CIA in 1947. So these entities are examples of what we're talking about, of these steering groups, these breakaway inner cliques. This is what we mean by the cryptocracy, the shadow government, the deep state. That's who really runs things in the United States. And they run things from the in a kind of public-private way. So they're hidden in plain sight. It's not like a super secret, hidden, nobody knows who runs things group. They're in the open, but they're also doing a lot of things in their private meetings. That's the Chatham House rules, so to speak. So if we go back to the 1910s, 20s, 30s in the UK, the groups around Lord Rothschild and Lord Milner, they had passed away, but they handed on their legacy to the next generation who were running what they believe would be a reformed Marxist socialist order for the world. Reformed Marxism is just Marxism updated for accounting for the fact that many aspects of Marxism had failed. So you had these elements in Marxism like the proletariat rising up and seizing the means of production. That didn't happen. And so the Marxist socialists in the UK, many of them, said, we got to kind of update. We got to reform this, because obviously Joe Sixpack is not interested in the debates about dialectics that Trotsky talked about. So we got to fix this. We got to come up with some new way. And they had the idea to align themselves with progressive-minded, very wealthy people. This is what Fabian socialism is. It's Marxist socialist ideology that is not interested in an immediate bloody revolution, but using the techniques of social engineering and statecraft and the long march through the institutions to eventually seize institutional power over many, many decades or even centuries to then create the eventual Marxist order that they want. So it's a more pragmatic approach than the idealistic approach of classical Marxists. And they ended up being very successful because they ended up gaining a lot of wealthy financial support, including people like Henry Ford, people like the Rothschilds, people like even David Rockefeller was a big fan of the Fabian socialist model. He studied under Harold Lasky, one of the most famous Fabian socialist professors. So as we've mentioned many times over, and I'm not going to rehash this point because I've said it so many times, most of the entities that we know of in the world today that have a tremendous amount of power and call a lot of the shots, things like the CFR, things like the Royal Institute for International Affairs, things like the League of Nations and then the United Nations, the socialist organizations that exist out there in the World Bank, the IMF, NATO, Royal Council of Churches, National Council of Churches, Aspen Institute, Bilderberg, all of these, trilateral, they were all founded by Fabian socialists and ideologues to push various types of Fabian socialist ideology. So that's really the idea behind most of what's happening in the world today. That doesn't mean that everybody out there is self-consciously a Fabian socialist. There might be many people in these groups who are full-on Marxists, some that are Democrats, some that are, you know, who knows what, full-on classical Marxists. But for the most part, classical Marxism doesn't really exist anymore. Most people are not straight up hardcore classical Marxists because a lot of what Marx talked about didn't come about. And so they've kind of adapted to, well, we gotta morph with and adapt to and change to the times. And so they're much more amenable to monopoly capitalism as Marxist socialists. And so they have this hybrid view, which is what we're talking about. In the 1990s, this was called the Third Way. And the idea was that with the fall of the Soviet Union, maybe they could combine Eastern Sovietism into Western capitalism and create this hybrid synthesis system out of this dialectic of East versus West. And we just read, for example, Jacques Attali's book, Millennium, from 1990, where he was talking about this. He was talking about it as a dialectical conflict of East and West, of capitalism, Sovietism, and out of this would come this synthesis of some form of technocracy, which combined both elements of capitalism, elements of Sovietism, communism, socialism, Marxism. And this slow approach model, they found to be a lot better than, again, the quick, immediate, bloody revolution of classical Marxism or of the Jacobins. That doesn't work very well. It has a lot of bloodshed, and oftentimes it just brings in something way worse. So why not use a longer, slower, scientific, methodological approach to bring about these ends? Now, a lot of people think, for example, that NATO was founded as an anti-communist institution. It was not. It was founded by Fabian socialists who were opposed to Stalinism and the NKVD and that form of Sovietism, not socialism. And this is why people are always getting confused, because they hear all these terms and these words and, well, who is this group? Is it that group? Is it all of these groups that we listed are founded by people in the circles of Rose, Rothschild, Milner, etc. Even the New Age movement from Madame Blavatsky, guess what? She was a Fabian socialist. So what about Islam? How does Islam factor into this? Well, I was happy to see that, you know, a lot of times when you read people's analyses of this, they're very one-sided. They don't have a nuanced approach. They don't really think about how there could be multiple things going on here. So a lot of times right-wingers will think that, oh, it's all Islam versus classical liberalism, or it's, you know, the terrorists that did 9/11 versus the free Christian West or something like that. I mean, this is just a super dumbed down, not even close to how it's really going on in the real world, how complex it actually is. So I want to try to demystify it and make it a little less complex. One thing that people don't understand is what's with this alliance between the left and Islam. We've seen this for a long time, and there seems to be something to this. And it doesn't, on the face of it, make much sense because, well, doesn't Islam typically oppose a lot of these leftist principles? That's true. But there's more going on because it's a geostrategic thing. It's not really to do with the ideas themselves. And if we go back to the early Fabian socialists in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, guess what? They were writing and talking about how to bring into the UK Islam. And they wanted this because, this is their own writings, they wanted to replace the existing white population with a foreign population that had a diametrically opposed worldview on purpose, like Huntington talked about. Now, Huntington doesn't talk about this in like a conspiracy way, but he does say that these worldviews are in conflict. They're not, you can't assimilate these two positions. They're mutually exclusive positions. Well, it turns out that in the 1910s, 20s, 30s, 40s, many of the early Fabian socialists wrote many books praising Muhammad and Islam. Part of the reason for this, not the only reason, but part of the reason for this is that many of the British elite had gotten a kind of fascination with Islam and Arabic culture. That's because of a lot of the intelligence operations, a lot of the connections between Islam and the British intelligence and the Muslim Brotherhood, the previous spies that we mentioned. And so there were many Arabists and many Orientalists and many people who studied these cultures, and some of them perhaps who even maybe believed it. It's not exactly clear what worldview King Charles has, but he's expressed in many instances a lot of interest in Sufism. He was even inducted at one point into a Sufi order. Now, he tends to be more of a perennialist, and so he seems to kind of change and like all the religions, so who knows what he really believes, but he has at many, in many occasions, expressed a fascination and interest with Sufism and thus other forms of Islam. But that's interesting because there's a long history, again, of the British elite. It seems like about half of them were pro, for example, Palestine around the time of the Balfour Declaration. And about the other half of them were pro Zionist and wanted to set up a Zionist state. And we covered that in the Quigley book. So it's not a black or white issue. I'm just saying that that's part of the power structure in the UK was very fascinated with and very into Islam. This led, for example, British intelligence to setting up a puppet mufti in Jerusalem. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem was explicitly a British intelligence operative and asset. And that's because they really wanted to have that control there as well, if they had their asset there. And that's why you see him meeting with Hitler, for example. There's a famous picture of that guy meeting with Hitler. If you look up the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, by the way, he looks just like Ryan Gosling. So I've been making that joke for many years, but he literally looks just like him. So maybe it's like reincarnated. He reincarnated as Ryan Gosling or something. I mean, I don't believe in reincarnation, but that's just a joke. The Fabian Socialists, to go back to these characters around the circles of Milner and Rothschild and all that, they also had a lot of associates like Annie Besant, Bertrand Russell, H.G. Wells. You probably heard of them. We've lectured through all their books. Guess what? They're all interested in Fabian Socialism. And the clearest examples of this are the writings of, for example, H.G. Wells. Wells wrote that we would enter into a scientific technocracy, and this would be basically like Star Trek. We're all going to be living in the Federation and flying around in you know, space coon pods or whatever. Of course, that's not really where we are. But what people don't know is that they all wrote about how much they loved Muhammad and Islam. Now, they don't believe Islam, but they had this fascination with this love, this desire for Islam to enter into the UK and Europe. Why? Islam isn't immediately compatible with New Age stuff. Well, they began by liking and appreciating Sufism. The Fabians were in love with Sufism, and it's actually a large part of Sufism that helped to inject the energy and the impetus to the New Age movement. For example, Madame Blavatsky was a fan of it. Besant was a fan of Islam and Sufism. And so they brought in to the UK these professors who were promoting and were kind of missionaries for Islam through Sufism originally, because Sufism is more of a mystical Neoplatonic Islam, and that's more amenable to a population that was still nominally Christian like the British were. So even though the Church of England is kind of a joke, by this time, people were, again, much more open to other options since the Church of England had becoming more and more and more liberal. Today, it's just completely, totally gone. But even at this time, it was becoming liberalized. And so people were saying, well, maybe there's other options. And so they started reading Rumi, the poet, getting into his Sufism. Theosophy was also very amenable to Sufism. You started having professors, lecturers at Oxford, Cambridge, etc., teaching Islamic courses, teaching Islamic lectures, classes, printing books. And a Sufi institute was set up called the ICR, the Institute for, so I forget the exact name of it, but it's called the ICR, and it's set up by this guy who was brought into Oxford basically to help Islamicize the UK. But this model was no different than the EU as well. So understand that the Fabian Socialists were saying that how could we replace Christianity and the indigenous population in Europe to make it more amenable to this EU model that they wanted. Yes, they wanted an EU even in that early day. Even in the 20s and 30s, these people were discussing how to create a European Socialist Union. How would we create that? Well, we're going to have to get rid of Christianity, they say, the existing Christian systems that are there, and the Christian population. How would we do that? The best way to do that, they said, they strategize, bring in gigantic amounts of Muslims. So Sufism was originally the cultural engineering in the 1930s, 40s, etc., to eventually shift over into the more radical, quote, orthodox branches of Islam. They couldn't immediately bring in all of the Salafi, Wahhabi people who were already, many of them, working for the British Empire and for British intelligence, Muslim Brotherhood. They brought in the Sufis, and then they warmed people up after many decades. Again, that is the Fabian slow kill model. Then eventually you've got essentially Muslims running the whole place. You've got Londonistan, as it's known, for many, many years. And this is why you've got British intelligence working with and protecting many of these, quote, radicals for many, many decades. How are they allowed to just run wild and do all this stuff in the UK? The blind sheikh, all these people who are obviously, you know, the double agents and operatives. Well, because the intelligence services are not actually opposed to Islam. Now, people in the, quote, conspiracy world have been saying this for so long, especially after the Big Nine event, right? And people who didn't believe in false flags or any of this stuff, they derided and talked bad about us and said how evil we were and all this kind of stuff. Now, but I appreciate Ratzi because he understands that the operatives, for example, in the 7/7 event were working for British intelligence. They were people on the roll. Harun Rashid Azawad was recruited by MI6 in Kosovo when he was doing things for the KLA. The KLA was another fake Western-created operation for the Islamic Kosovo liberation. That was Tony Blair and Bill Clinton selecting CIA or selecting Al-Qaeda operatives to run those operations there. And one of those characters was Harun Rashid Azawad, who was then brought to the UK and one of the key figures in the London 7/7 event. So these, I mean, what does that tell you? In fact, you can still find the Fox News clip where they covered this, that Harun Rashid Azawad was running that operation and then he'd been recruited by British intelligence. So it's not government incompetency. This is people who say, they're so incompetent. Don't they know? They're so stupid. It's the same lie that allows the politicians to do all this stuff in the U.S. as well. Well, Biden's so stupid. What a boob. They're not stupid. The politicians are stupid. Whoever that British Kair or whatever his name is, yeah, he might be a idiotic tool. But the people that are running these things in the intelligence services, they're not stupid. Now, they're not infallible. They're not omnipotent. But they knew all along these people were radical Muslims. And by the way, I came to the UK years ago for a talk, and I was accosted and interrogated for 40 minutes at the airport because I was bringing in books to sell. It wasn't thousands of books. It was a couple dozen books to sell at a talk. So they can stop me and interrogate me for 40 minutes and almost not let me into the country, but they can't stop, and they don't know who Harun Rashid Azawad is, who worked for British intelligence. Come on, this is ridiculous. The same contradiction came out this week in the New Zealand COVID document that Alex covered. We'll talk about that in just a second. This amazing contradiction. This is the Alex Jones Show. Don't go anywhere.
An InfoWars fan favorite is now back in stock after over a year of not being available. It is the vitamin C and zinc with rose hips. Now, this is a copy of Linus Pauling, who won the Nobel Prize for his findings on vitamin C's formula. It is 1,000 milligrams of organic vitamin C with zinc to take it into the cells and rose hips. He believed that supercharged it. This formula is amazing. We've not had it for over 12 months, and now it's available back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. It is simply incredible. What it does for your whole body, your immune system, is next level. So whether you're in super good health or not in good health, everybody benefits from this formula. It's back in stock, discounted at InfoWarsStore.com. Vitamin C and zinc, with rose hips at InfoWarsStore.com. And it funds the operation. So that's a win-win. Get your vitamin C with zinc, the Linus Pauling formula, at InfoWarsStore.com.
All right, folks. Vitamin Mineral Fusion is finally back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. We just had a shipment come in months ago, and it sold out so fast that we frantically worked to get this back in stock as soon as possible because Vitamin Mineral Fusion is one of our most popular products. Now, the reason that you should be getting this product is for the same reason that you get any other multivitamin product. Our body needs these vitamins, these minerals, and these nutrients in order to live and operate at the most efficient level possible. Now, you should be getting this from InfoWarsStore.com instead of from your pharmacy or your grocery store or with name brands or generic versions, because this has optimal absorption included in it. It's designed for your body to be able to actually absorb all of the nutrients in the most efficient way possible, unlike other competitors on the market that just simply don't operate that way. Now, this includes comprehensive nutritional support. Vitamin Mineral Fusion from InfoWarsStore.com has A, C, D, E, B complex, essential minerals like magnesium, calcium, and zinc. Everything the body needs to survive. It also includes enhanced absorption and utilization. Like I was saying before, this is an advanced multivitamin formulation designed to let your body actually absorb everything so you don't just flush it out like with so many competitors. And finally, it will support energy production and recovery. So make sure you check out Vitamin Mineral Fusion at InfoWarsStore.com right now, not only because this product is an amazing product for anybody in the world to take, but because by purchasing from InfoWarsStore.com, you keep us on the air in this most dangerous time for both InfoWars and our country. We know that freedom of speech is under attack. We know that the New World Order is trying to take over and shut down InfoWars and, frankly, shut you down too. So by getting Vitamin Mineral Fusion at InfoWarsStore.com, not only are you fighting for your health, but you're fighting for your country and you're fighting for humanity itself.
How's it going, Harrison? Thank you for taking my call. You guys have the best crew. You guys are awesome. Just wanted to plug real quick. Just recently found out after 14 years, I got a quarter or half my muscle torn off from my shoulder blade, right? So I've been in constant pain for years, and the turmeric, the nitric boost, the fish oil, everything. If I don't take it, dude, I'm totally feeling it, and I'm on the floor. This is one of the only things is your products that gets me going. If it's helping me, and I've been in pain for 14 years, you guys got to try some of it.
Wow. Yeah. It's true, folks. You hear people call in like this all the time. These products are life-changing if you take them as directed, especially combined with exercise and a good diet. Things like Bodies, the turmeric supplement, Turmeric 95 from InfoWars MD. Incredibly powerful, life-changing stuff at InfoWarsStore.com. Thanks for the call, Drew.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
I was just reading on Twitter, somebody who presumably is from the UK was talking about how there are now 140 MPs that are explicitly, openly Fabian socialists, including Sadiq Khan, including the present governor of the Bank of England. So understand that this ideology is not something that died or went away. It might be obscure. It might be something that not many people in America know about. But this ideology is very popular in the UK for sure. In fact, many of the Labour politicians have been covert and secret Fabian socialists for a long time. Some of them even more openly. So again, this is not a secret society or some sort of secret thing that we're going to hide in the shadows and nobody knows that we're Fabian socialists. This isn't a public organization, an entity that has, again, a very public symbology that they show quite often, that they have a few symbols. One of them is the wolf in sheep's clothing. This is the idea that, going back to Beatrice and Sidney Webb and others, that in order to make Marxism and socialism successful, what they would have to do is don the cloak, the image of a enlightened progressive of liberalism. Even though classical Marxism is not liberal, it's known as anti-liberal because it's opposed to liberal economic theory. And if you go into the history of Marxism, you'll learn very clearly that very quickly that they're not liberal. They're anti-liberal. The Fabian socialists decided that it was much more successful to don the cloak of being a progressive, of being a liberal, of being favorable towards capitalism and so forth, liberal economic theory. And so they sort of aligned and melded with it. And that was one of the key strategies that made them so successful in the UK. For example, Tony Blair was openly a Fabian socialist. His whole policy, his whole everything he was doing was part of that Fabian socialist ideology. So it is imperial reformed Marxist socialism. That's what Fabian socialism is. And it works together closely with monopoly capitalism explicitly. That's all you have to understand. And that's how you understand that that's the world that we're going into. That's why so many of these politicians who you're constantly fighting over between them being liberal or conservative or liberal or conservative, they're all working with the same basic ideology. I'm not saying that Trump is a Fabian socialist. He's not. Trump is just a straight up capitalist, I think, in terms of his ideology. But the Federal Reserve System, Keynesian economics, is Fabian socialist economics. John Milton Keynes was into Fabian socialism. He's one of these characters who helped to set up these institutions like IMF and World Bank, which are part of this gigantic Fabian socialist structure, which is the governing ideological system of technocracy that is running the world in the West. Again, League of Nations, United Nations, these are all entities established from this mindset, from this ideology. And again, the intelligence services, especially in the UK, were never opposed to these Islamic ideologies, Islamic theology, or Islamic radicalism. That's why it's been fostered, allowed, and promoted in the UK. And people have been, again, so averse to this idea and thinking that it's a conspiracy theory. But this last week woke everyone up to this. Now people are realizing, hey, wait a minute. You know, idiot right-wingers thinking that they can make an alliance with Islam. And now the Muslims are all, you know, fighting and attacking and pointing out that you're not going to make an alliance with this. This is a religion of submission and ultimately submission by force as well. It's not a religion where you debate and everybody's friendly and we come to these conclusions on the basis of rational discourse and ideology. No, no, no. That's not how that works. There's some Muslims who will do that. But ultimately, Islam doesn't operate in that way. That's a Western idea. So it's silly to think that non-Western people are going to operate on the principles of Western liberalism and debate, enlightenment, ideology. They'll only do that until they gain the upper hand, and then it flips, and then you get this system. Now, the crazy part, though, is that the elites aren't even really into Islam, but they see Islam as a very useful geopolitical tool. That's the key here. And I was mentioning earlier the New Age movement, that it's largely traceable, I think, to Madame Blavatsky, who is a Fabian socialist in the circles of Milner and all these Rothschilds and these people. But she also, and the New Age movement also shares a lot of its origin with Sufism in the UK and the promotion of Sufi Islam and its syncretist kind of Neoplatonic principles. Neoplatonism is one of these systems which allows all of the world religions to kind of be subsumed under this superstructure, this perennialist type of structure. And also, by the way, Ratzio makes a key point, which I believe F. William Ingdahl makes in his books, particularly Full Spectrum Dominance, which is that the 1973 oil crisis was key because that allowed Bilderberg and Kissinger to make the decision via OPEC and all that to establish the Western reliance on Arab oil. Have you ever wondered why? I mean, we don't have to have Arab oil. Doesn't America have gigantic untapped oil reserves? Yeah, sure. But the global elite intentionally don't want us tapping those things. That's why there's these laws and there's these, you know, they pass laws against drilling on this continent. And we have to rely on foreign oil because of these deals that were made for big globalist institutions. And Ratzio has a fascinating chapter on that where he talks about how This was decided in the Bilderberg meetings via Kissinger and others, as Engdahl points out. Like other key British institutions, the Fabian founded London School for Economics with its closely linked Department of International Relations, set up by the Fabian Lord Haldane and his friend Lord Rothschild, together with Sir Ernst Cassel in the 1920s and the European Institute, had been running research courses and seminars and lectures to promote the advanced thinking on EU-Muslim relations. In 2010, a new pro-Islamic outfit was created with the name of the Center for Middle Eastern Studies. It was added to the London School of Economics arsenal. The pro-Islamic stance of such institutions is demonstrated by their receipt of vast sums of money from Islamic regimes in other countries. And so money had been coming in. You probably remember that famous banker, Peter Sutherland. Well, Peter Sutherland, who talked about replacing the existing populations of Europe, famously, the banker, he was one of these key people involved in making sure that funding went to these entities to Islamicize Europe. So understand, it's not just outside Islamic powers and forces. It's the traitors within the EU and the UK, particularly in the Rothschild, Rhodes, Milner, Fabian circles, and the EU, because these are the people that set up the EU. Remember, the same people that we're talking about set up the EU. It wasn't Hitler that set up the EU. He had a plan for his version of an EU, but the EU was set up by the OSS and the CIA on record. Bill Donovan, Jan Smuts, the European coal project, those are all OSS projects. They're not projects by Hitler. So it's not true that Hitler set up the EU. It's verifiable on record that Donovan and the CIA and the OSS established the EU, and it was decided on at the Bilderberg meetings. Daniel Esselin has in his book the declassified old documents from those old Bilderberg meetings about setting up the EU. And that was, they weren't doing that with Hitler, okay? Anyway, Rotzi goes on to talk about the decision to make the West dependent on Arab oil as part of this global superstructure that they wanted to set up. The same idea with making American manufacturing not local, but dependent on Chinese goods. That same strategy is, do you understand that the deindustrialization and sending all of that to other countries is on purpose? It's not just because they want to have a tax break, right? Like if you listen to somebody like Peter Schiff, it's, well, companies just go over to other countries because of high taxes. Yeah, but they do that on purpose to deindustrialize the West, because these people said, we want to deindustrialize the West. And the 1973 Carter era oil crisis was engineered. That's the thing. Because we don't have to be reliant on foreign oil. But now what do we have? Well, decades later, after 9/11 and after all of this, you have a Fabian socialist Islamic-ish mayor, Sadiq Khan, who is a member of the Fabian Society, shadow minister for London, at least when this book was written. Many, many other, as we said, politicians who, as their explicit party stated goal, is, as for example, Tony Blair praised the Quran and Islamic imperialism as a progressive move in 2006. So this is like a couple of years after 9/11, a year before 7/7, and Tony Blair saying, we need more Islam. Wait a minute. According to the official narrative of 9/11, it's right radical Saudis and Osama bin Laden that are waging this covert war through terror on the West. And so what is Tony Blair and everybody, all these politicians answer? We need more Islam. But they're not stupid. People who are organizing the Fabian methodology and all this, they're not dumb. They're the people that set up all the institutions that we know today, including NATO. So why would we think, and why do we keep defaulting to thinking that everybody who's running things is just stupid and incompetent? That is a cloak that allows them to keep getting away with more. Until you recognize and understand that the world is not run by total idiots, but that there is an Atlantis' power block. And I'm not saying that they're infallible or omnipotent. They do have weaknesses and they can fail at this. Many of the things that they push fail. Many of the things that they push fall apart and don't work. And we have to understand, for example, that to give you some good news, if you go back to Jacques Attali's books, if you remember, Jacques Attali said that when we roll out this technocratic order, there will be massive reaction. And he even gives the decades when he thinks that will happen. He says between 2020 and 2040, he says there will be a large uprising against this. And he says that's the one thing we have to worry about. And guess what he says is the main concern? He says Christian theocracy in the West and in America will make a resurgence, and we have to be concerned with that as the thing that might foil the rollout of the technocratic global order. He explicitly says that in his 2006 Brief History of the Future. And Jacques Attali is not a nobody. He's the Kissinger of France. We just covered his 1990 book a few weeks ago, where he said in 1990, I'm being put as the head of this new EU bank. You're right, the official rollout of the EU was right around that time. They had planned the EU 50, 70 years earlier. And because of the fall of the wall, Jacques Attali says, I'm being placed as the head of this big bank here to help integrate the former Soviet bloc countries into the EU and to get them under IMF debt and control. See, that's how it works. That's the Keynesian model. So it's not capitalism versus communism. That's old stuff. It's populism and local governance and the rights of individuals and people versus collectivism and Fabian socialism, which is aligned with corporatism. And we still have people running around acting like it's the state versus libertarianism. I mean, this is just such a low tier, childish, non-nuanced, non-reality based philosophy or picture of what's going on. I mean, if it's libertarianism versus the state, then why were all the corporations and the Fortune 500, Fortune 100 pushing all the COOF stuff, all the Skittles stuff, all the TRANS stuff? That's not state versus corporations. It's a gigantic, megalithic corporate private conglomeration, including all the biggest banks and all of the Fortune 100 and Fortune 500. They're all bad. That's the point. And so the way to break out of this system is to understand that none of these systems are good. None of these systems are going to save anybody. You're not going to fix it by pushing more classical liberalism, the philosophy of 400 years ago, which is totally not even relevant in the modern world. You're only going to fix it with a return to what the global elite themselves say is the danger. Real grounded theism, Christian theism. What did H.G. Wells and Bertrand Russell and, say, Alice Bailey, another one of the Fabian socialist witches in the circles of these people who helped found the New Age movement, whose philosophy was adopted by the United Nations, what did she say would have to be done? Does anybody recall? She has a 10-point plan to do what? To destroy Christianity. Why? A 10-point plan to destroy Christianity? She says we would have to destroy Christianity to bring in the New Age and the socialist world government. The capitalist socialist world government. Fast forward almost 100 years-ish, and what does Jacques Attali say? Our main concern is a resurgent, authentic Christianity in America and in the West. That would be the stumbling block to rolling out the Skynet, Matrix, Golem project. He calls it a golem, linking everyone's brains into a supercomputer. It's called a golem, which comes out of the medieval Kabbalist mythology, the golem. By the way, the famous father of cybernetics, Norbert Wiener, I was reading a bunch of his stuff this last week. Well, guess what? If you read his book on cybernetics, within the first 20 pages, he says that, yes, I worked with the Rockefeller Foundation, MIT, the Macy Foundation, Gregory Bateson, and a host of other nefarious characters who just happen to be all the same characters that are part of MKUltra. So this, even Norbert Wiener's own book on cybernetics vindicates that it comes out of the MKUltra projects. He doesn't mention MKUltra, He doesn't have to, because if you've read the other books on MKUltra, you know that all of those entities are directly connected with and funding the various MKUltra projects. And both of the classic books on MKUltra, John Marx's book, Walter Boert's book, both from the late 70s, in their books with chapters about how MKUltra transitioned into cybernetics. And what's the point of all that? Well, guess what? Norbert Wiener wrote another book called God and the Golem. And the Golem is what he's talking about with cybernetics. So in Jewish medieval philosophy and Kabbalism, the idea of a being with no soul that is then ensouled or controlled by the magician and created from a husk, the Klefot, that's what a Golem is, G-O-L-E-M. And so from that vantage point, they would see the masses as a gigantic Golem linked into the global brain. That's not my words. That's Jacques Attali's words. Jacques Attali says that when everybody's linked into the global brain, it's the Golem. It's what he says in his book, Brief History of the Future. Now, I don't think it's only Jewish-minded individuals or Kabbalists or whoever. There's all kinds of individuals involved in pushing this ideology and this project. There are politicians, there's CEOs, there's people who are not partisan to necessarily Jewish mysticism, but they don't have to be, because they're all part of the same agenda, which is to roll out this technocratic control system, which always has the same models: depopulation, one world currency, one world government, tracking, tracing, and control for all means and medium of exchange, shutting off your wallet, social credit system, all of that is part of this whole thing. But Islam plays a key role in this, which we can't overlook or ignore, which is to be a kind of battering ram for the global elite technocrats to bring them into the areas where they can be used. So in the case of Europe, that was the most logical conclusion for the technocrats. What other religion and historic antithesis to Europe and its pseudo-Christian history, at least in the last 1,000 years, what other option would you do? There's no other options. You're going to bring in Chinese, communism. You're going to import Islam on a mass scale. That's the only thing that makes any sense. And Peter Sutherland, these other famous banking elites, said that that's exactly what they were doing. So they openly said this. I remember when it came out on mainstream news that Peter Sutherland was saying, we got to bring in more Muslims to destroy the existing European state to create a more fundamentally homogenous EU. General Wesley Clark, everybody quotes him about the seven nation plan. Well, guess what? He also had other quotes, because he was at NATO, where he said that part of the philosophy and strategy of NATO is to destroy Europe, to make it a EU. He knew this. He admitted it. You're not supposed to talk about the Kalergi plan, but I have Kalergi's book. He talks about creating a homogenous Europe, a new European socialist state. And Quigley says that the British Royal Society elite adopted the Count's plan, not a conspiracy theory. He wrote a book about it. So remember, the books that they write, they call that conspiracy theory, even though it's public books. And it's not a conspiracy theory, because it's not a theory. It's an actual plan that's rolled out in the books. They write about it. Anyway, so Islam also plays another role too, though, in being utilized by Western intelligence, going all the way back to British intelligence. At the turn of the last century, utilizing a lot of tribal warfare, sparking tribal warfare. This is just imperial geopolitics, where you keep the tribes warring with each other to control those tribes. This goes back to Caesar, his diaries, and how he would control the Germanic tribes and other tribes, the British tribes that were the barbarians. He would keep them fighting with each other so that he could manage them. The same principle was going on with the British Empire. And I'm not saying that the British Empire started all the tribal conflicts. There have always been tribal conflicts in the Middle East. I'm well aware of that. But I'm just saying that imperial geopolitics typically plays on this ability to play up and exacerbate the existing local tensions. That's exactly the strategy that Brzezinski adopted, again, based on earlier British intelligence models for how they would utilize radical Islam in the late 1970s and throughout the 80s. In fact, go look up the Mujahideen at the White House. I mean, Ronald Reagan has the freedom fighters, the Mujahideen, which will become Al-Qaeda eventually in a few decades, in the White House, actually in one decade. So from 1980s, right, Al-Qaeda is the freedom fighting heroes meeting with Ronald Reagan in the White House. 10 years later, Al-Qaeda is behind, you know, the World Trade Center bombing, and there's this Osama bin Laden figure, and, you know, we got to watch out for him. And, oh, he happens to pop up again, 9-11. We had no idea what was going on, even though there was already a 1993 provocateured Imad Salam bombing of the World Trade Center. Condoleezza Rice says, we had no idea that anybody would bomb these things or try to attack these. This is no idea. We'd never heard of this. Even though they were running drills like Vigilant Guardian that very day. So it's all a bunch of lies, because in reality, the system, especially in the security deep state, they know all this stuff. At least the ones at the Brzezinski Kissinger level, right? People who are at lower level, they don't know all this stuff. The lower level people are well indoctrinated through the education system to believe a lot of the bullcrap. Right. They believe in the dialectic. They believe that this and that. They don't understand black ops. They don't understand, this kind of stuff until you get, I think, up in this higher level of people who are invited to things like the steering group committees. Then you get people who are more familiar with how this stuff really works. People who understand, what the Trilateral Commission is and who understand the technocracy that they want to bring in. So, again, Islam plays a key role in being a battering ram. 100 years ago, it played a key role through Sufism of being a kind of mystical door to open the way for Europe and the UK to be Islamicized. That then allowed for the election through guilt manipulation, through a lot of tactics, a lot of propagation, a lot of propaganda in the media, a lot of foreign entities using NGOs to truck in and boat in all these people. I went to Italy a few months ago, and several Italian cities had no Italians. In fact, we went to Genoa. I didn't see any salami, by the way, but in Genoa, it was like I was in Africa. Literally, it was like there were no Italians in Genoa. Pretty crazy. And the same thing has happened to a lot of the Italian islands, which are not Italian islands anymore. Now they're African islands. And it's by design. In fact, you can go read the AP articles saying that there are, we know who the foundations and the think tanks and the NGOs are that are doing this. It's all public. So it just requires a little more sophisticated thinking than dialectical thinking. I want to remind you guys that I will be speaking next week in Nashville. You can go to the cognitivelibertyconference.com. I'll be speaking there with Dr. James Lindsay and others. So you can get your tickets there. You can get my books at jasonalysis.com in the shop. I have two books on Hollywood and symbolism. I have my big fat geopolitical book, 660 pages on my geopolitical and theological writings. Go to the InfoWars store and support Alex by getting those products. This is Jay Dyer.
I hate to use this analogy, but truth is the way to go, so I'll just use it. I remember growing up with all four of my grandparents. And first my dad's dad died, and then his mother died, and then my mother's father died, and my mother's mother died. And they were all amazing, and you think they're always going to be there. But one day they're dead. Well, it's the same thing with InfoWars. We've barely survived in the last few years, like right up to millimeters. And people then go, well, you're still on air. You must be invincible. We are shot up. The operation is bleeding to death. And that's okay. We've done our mission, and we're going to continue on even if this operation shut down. But that said, I don't want to prove to you by not going 100% and us shutting down that I wasn't BSing about this. We are very, very, very close to being shut down. And literally, the final products we have come in at InfoWarsStore.com could be the last time you get them. Now, there's a lot of stuff that goes into this, a lot of strategy. There's a good chance 50-50 we can stay on air. But if we don't get funding, we will shut down. I need you to go to InfoWarsStore.com and get amazing products. Now, these three have been bestsellers. And these are the last runs of them unless we get a deal done in the next few months. So we have Vitamin Mineral Fusion. We have the Vitamin C with zinc and the rose hips that's so incredible. And we have Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com, all discounted. But this could easily be the final run. So I need your support, plus they're great products. Get it today at InfoWarsStore.com. And while you're there, get a book, get a film, get a t-shirt, whatever you do, share the article, share the videos, and pray for the broadcast. You've kept us on air this long, and I'm very thankful to all of you. we are now at go moment here with this election, everything going on. We need your support now. So please go to InfoWarsStore.com right now and support us in this critical time.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.